It's okay. So hello, everyone. Welcome to our fourth class on Eshet Chayil. I'll start with three introductions. So introduction number one, it's going to be our last class of the season, meaning we will not be finishing Eshet Chayil today because there's still a lot more to explore and to discover. I do want to finish until verse 20. But then we're still left with more than 10 verses, Psukim on Eshet Chayil. So we will probably resume that after the Chag, after Pesach. But also, again, we're not going to have any classes during Pesach. But after Pesach as well, there will be 2.5 weeks where Priel and I will be in Israel. And that leads me to the second thing that I want to share with everyone. And this is that you all know that we lost our brother-in-law. My brother-in-law and Priel's brother, Avidan, over October 7th, the Nova Festival. And my family and Priel's parents really wanted and they thought about different ideas of how to commemorate his memory in the best way possible. Now, because Avidan was murdered on a day that's supposed to be the maybe the most joyous day of us with the Torah, dancing with the Torah, enjoying the Torah, concluding the Torah and starting again our cycle of reading of the Torah, they decided they want to dedicate a Sefer Torah, a Torah scroll, in his memory in Israel, in the kibbutz Masuot Yitzchak, where we live. It's actually going to be, Bezrat Hashem, the first Sephardi Sefer Torah to ever be dedicated in the kibbutz because my in-laws are Moroccan, and so far there's only Ashkenazi Sefer Torah. So it is very meaningful. And as you all know, dedicating a Sefer Torah is not an easy thing, and it's not a cheap thing to do, especially not now in during the war. But nevertheless, they decided they want to go on this journey, and we're with them. And I sent out an email yesterday to many of you. I think all of you received it, and if not, then I will resend it soon. And I'm also going to talk about it now, and I'll share the screen so you can see where we thought Priel and I we thought of also asking our community here in Toronto maybe to join us and support this initiative in dedicating a Sefer Torah in memory of Avidan. And really because it's going to be in Israel, it's not something that is going to be here, nevertheless, something that we still feel that maybe some people will want to be part of, will want to feel like they want to help, that they want to, be part of this. So we decided we're going to do this with our shul, Shari Tefillah. So everything will be, all the contributions, we'll receive a tax receipt as well, even though it's there's donations to the charity of Avidan in Israel. Still, it's going to get an American, a Canadian tax receipt. I hope you all got this flyer yesterday to your email, to your inbox. Thank you to those who have already made contributions. And I will also send the link right now in the chat box. Okay. So you can all see this and have the link. Let me just copy this, and we can copy it like this. If I'm not wrong. Oh, it just opens this chart filler. So let me just copy it from here and post it now in our chat box. And really, no gift is too small. It's just if someone wants to and feels like they want to be part of this and they want to help in this journey that our family is going through in dedicating the Sefer Torah, then that will be very, very, very appreciative. So again, thank you to everyone for that, and we hope that this Sefer Torah will be bringing at least some nechama to my in-laws, to all the family, to all the Turjaman family. And Bezrat Hashem, in every Simchas Torah, from now on, starting this coming Simchas Torah, we will be able to dance and celebrate with this Sefer Torah on the day that Avidan was taken from us. I should also mention that the plan is we're going to Israel after Pesach because the Hachnasat Sefer Torah, the event where we're going to conclude the writing of the Sefer Torah and bring it and help and bring it into the shul, deliver it to the shul. This will be taking place. Our goal is to finish it by Lag BaOmer, which is Avidan's birthday, supposed to be 27th birthday. And that's our hopes. That's our tefillot that we will be able to conclude it and to finish the writing and the dedication and everything by Lag BaOmer, so we can be that as well. There's different opportunities to contribute if someone wants to, whatever amount. There's also different steps or levels if someone wants to dedicate a letter or a parsha or even a chumash. There's different ways of doing it. The link is now in your chat box. I will also send afterwards when I send the recording and everything. I'll send again the link to this thing. So thank you very much, everyone, for that. And that would be our second second introduction. I'll just say that when we're going to be in Israel, then again, we're going to have a break of our classes probably until we come back from Israel by the end of May. So we don't have a lot of more classes until the end of the year, but we'll try to do as much as we can from this. Now, for our third introduction, and then we'll end, I cannot not mention what happened on Motzei Shabbos this past Saturday night. Now, I'll share with you something a little bit behind the scenes. So at 10:30 p.m. on Saturday night, after we opened our phones and we saw what happened and so on, I got a phone call from Rabbi Rafi Lipner, the rabbi in the shul where I'm the assistant rabbi of. And he asked me, like, Idan, what do you think? Like, what should we do? Should we gather Tehillim right now as a shul on Zoom? Everyone pray together for Israel. He has a daughter in Israel. She was very worried. What should we do? And so on and so on. I'll tell you what I told him, and that's what we did in our shul. And that's definitely something that I also recommend all of you if you want to do in your shuls or if you want to do by yourself. I personally don't think we should look at what happened on Saturday night as another, I want to say, October 7th. It's exactly the opposite. Let me explain why. After October 7th, many shuls gathered in Tehillim in prayers to help our brothers and sisters in Israel, because we felt like what can people here do to help our brothers and sisters in Israel? So we set Tehillim and we daven and we gather together and so on. This is a different case, folks. This is a very different case. I actually see here a very, very big opportunity for Israel in what happened on Saturday night. And I'll say that from my perspective, if we lost, many of us maybe lost a little bit of our trust in the IDF as the Israeli Defense Forces, as I want to say the responsibility of the IDF to defend the state of Israel, some of it was regained this past Saturday night. Sending over 300 ballistic missiles, explosive drones, cruise missiles, all of those from Iran to Israel in what is considered to be the biggest attack of any country with ballistic missiles to any other country in since the invention of those attacks, and what's considered to be maybe the biggest attack on any other country since World War II, and Israel just managing it all with its allies and not even one missile, Baruch Hashem, hitting civilian urban areas, right, or causing any casualties. This is first and foremost hashgacha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And for that, I told Rabbi Lipner, that's what we did in our shul, I want to do Tehillim, I want to do davening, but I want to do it as gratitude, as thank you, rather than as helping our brothers and sisters in Israel. Because I think that what we see here is that there is the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are on this land and on these people, and through his messengers, through the soldiers, the brave soldiers, and our Air Force, our strong Air Force might be the strongest, and if not strongest in the world, we managed to overcome this challenge that no other nation in the world would be able to overcome as we did, using technology and using our brains and our minds and our developments and our allies. And this is just something that is worth a hakarat hatov. So I want to dedicate this class today also as gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to our soldiers, our brave soldiers, and to all Israel's allies on this amazing, really, thing that happened on Saturday night. Because Iran was humiliated by this. They spent billions of dollars on such an attack and nothing happened from it. And I'll tell you more than that. I saw a report earlier today that said it cost Israel over $1 billion to shoot down all those missiles. So, it's a lot of money, but you can't really evaluate, saving lives and how much did that cost. But now everyone knows, every country in the world knows that if the country wants to purchase systems that will protect their air zone and will protect them from missiles, they know who to reach out to and where to buy this from. And I'm sure that any other country in the world, from Finland, who's afraid from Russia, or South Korea from North Korea, or even the UAE from Iran and Saudi Arabia, all the different countries in the world that are afraid from rockets and missiles, they know there is one place to buy it from. And I'm sure that Israel will only get more and more prosperous and more even rich from this kind of thing. All right. So at that note, we'll finish our introduction and we'll dive into our learning. So I'm sending again the source sheet in the chat box. Here you go. All right. You also have it in your emails. And a small quick review of what we did last week. So we started some of the psukim in Eshet Chayil. We carried on. We saw that an Eshet Chayil is not someone which is, you know, only in her home and only taking care of her household. She's actually someone who goes out and works hard and looks for, takes initiative and so on. We had a wonderful conversation here among the different participants last week. And I want to continue today with verse number 16, Pasuk Tzayin, and I hope to finish until Pasuk Kaf. Questions before we start? All right, so let's start. I'm reading in Pasuk Tet Zayin. It says the following thing. Zamema sade vatikachehu, mipri hapea nat'a karem. In English, she considered a field and bought it. With the fruit of her hands, she or he planted a vineyard. Why is there S/HE? What is exactly going on here? So in the Hebrew, you can see there are actually two ways of reading the same pasuk. One of them is nata with a hey at the end. One of them is nata without the hey. Now, what's the difference between the two? To all our Hebrew speakers, between nata and nata, what's the difference between the Hebrew? Who want to suggest, Miriam?
Feminine and masculine.
Feminine and masculine. Exactly. Feminine and masculine, right? Nat'a with a hay is for feminine. She planted. And nat'a without the hay is masculine. He planted. Now, there's two ways of looking at this verse. One is she considered a field. She thought of a field. She saw this field. She bought this field. And with the fruit of her hands, he, meaning her husband, planted a vineyard. That's one way of looking at this verse. All right. So it's interesting. Not everyone, we think Eshet Chayil is only about the women, but we see that there is a way to see that maybe they're working here in cooperation. Maybe an Eshet Chayil is someone who can actually do business with her husband. Now, before we came to Toronto, we were warned, by the organization, Torah Mitzion, who sent us to Toronto, that not all couples can actually work together in the same workplace. That it not necessarily works for everyone. Sometimes it's healthy for different couples to maybe separate to different workplaces and, you know, and not be with one another 24/7 and see each other at home and see each other in workplace. Sometimes having this separation is healthy. I don't know, each of you can think about your own spouse and if that works or not. We were warned. We were said, look, no, it's not for everyone. Baruch Hashem, thanks God. It turned out that for us it was good and we enjoy seeing each other every day and we both work in the same schools and we see each other at home and we see each other at work and we see each other at Baruch Hashem. The more, the better. But we can see from here that one way of reading this pasuk is that an Eshet Chayil is someone who can actually work with her husband. It's not only someone that can, you know, she's very successful on her own, but she can actually partner with her partner, with her spouse, and actually create something even bigger out of this. So there's one way of looking at this pasuk. Again, Zamema Sadeva Tikachehu, she considered a field and bought it. With the fruit of her hands, he planted a vineyard. That's one way of looking at it. But the classic way of looking at it is not that, like this. The classic way of looking on this pasuk is to read it with the hey, not ah. She planted the vineyard. And that brings us to a different world. Let me explain. I want to read, first of all, the Malbim in source number 2. The Malbim explains the following thing. What do we mean when she considered the field? He says, if she chooses to engage in working the land, for example, she considers deep thoughts on how to acquire a field, and from the profit of her labor that she gained from working in the land, she will look into planting a vineyard. The Malbim says, if I can cut it short and say, this Eshet Chayil is a businesswoman. She's a businesswoman. Why? Because she first of all thinks about, if she decides, for example, she wants to work the land, which, by the way, interestingly enough, at ancient times, usually the men were those who worked the land. They were the farmers. We don't find a lot of female farmers at those times, which is an interesting thing, thought to think about, that it appears here. But it says, let's say she wants to work the field. So she will think about which field to buy. She will raise the money to buy it. She will purchase the field. She will plant all the plants. She will harvest the field, and with the profit, with the gain that she gained, you know, all the profit she gained from this labor, she will think how to invest that future on, and she will actually invest it in a vineyard. So it's really, in other words, I think what the Malbim says here, an eshet chayil, it comes from this pasuk, is a woman that has this wide business, maybe kind of, vision. And she can see, she can look forward, and she can say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it in the best way I can, and use this profit and invest it later on. Very similar to that, you can see the Metzudah David, is verse number 3, says something very similar. He says, when she considered the field and set her eyes upon it, she won't rest until she acquires it. She is a sharp businesswoman. She will do everything she can. If she wants something, she'll get it. It's very interesting, because when we sing it on Erev Shabbat, when we sing Eshet Chayil, we sing it already on like almost like automatically. We don't think so much about the words that we're saying. But here we say, we talk about a woman that she's a very successful businesswoman. She has those skills. She wants something. She'll get this. And she'll also put the profit. I'll just finish. We saw number 4 also. Hoyle Moshe, same thing. She considered, he says, for many days, her mind is set upon this field. And she goes and gathers money until she buys it. She knows how to get the money. She knows what field to buy. She uses it to actually have future investments also in other fields. I think it's a beautiful way of looking at this pasuk. Yes, Claudette.
Today we think about women going out and work. But let's place this in the society that it is written in. And I think what the writer is trying to say to the men of that society, a woman can do this. A woman has these skills.
Yes.
Look at the woman, and she can do this.
Definitely, definitely. It's interesting to think about in that perspective, because it's not like, you know, Shlomo HaMelech is a great feminist. I mean, when we say those kind of stuff, we need to be careful, though, Claudette, not to be anachronistic. Like, we don't want to read the Tanakh from the perspective of a 21st century person. Because
no, I'm not reading it that way. I'm reading it and saying that that society did not think in that way. But yet somebody sees the beauty in what a woman can give.
Beautiful, beautiful, definitely. I also want to share with you, so well, to summarize this passage, we saw two different perspectives. One perspective says it's her working with her husband in cooperation. The other perspective says she's doing everything and she's very successful in it. And she's a businesswoman, a very successful businesswoman. Now, I want to tell you something, because it's interesting to see the Hebrew here. And that's a question I may ask maybe Miriam and Benny and Ruchama and others. Because it says the word in Hebrew that it uses is the word zamema. You see, zamema sadeh v'tikachehu, zamema. Now, what zamema means in Hebrew? Anyone knows? Zamema. What word did it come from? Shorash zayin memem, zamam. That's the shorash, the root. What word did it come from, zamema? Anyone heard of it? I mean, we say it every Shabbos. It's like, we don't even think about what we're saying. I mean, I say to myself, like, how many things we just do them because we've been used to doing them. And we've not even thinking about what we say. Benny.
She planned it. She was planning it.
She was planning it. She was planning. Zamema means to plan something. And if I can carry on with Benny, I should also tell you, zamema, in all other connotation, is very negative. Please be surprised. It's very negative. All right? Zamema, lizmom, something, is to plan something bad against someone. You can say that Iran, zamema, hatkafa neged Israel. Iran planned an attack against Israel.
To scheme.
To scheme, exactly.
You know, don't plan, but to scheme.
To scheme, exactly. To scheme some, exactly. So interestingly, how do all those commentaries read it as something positive? Because Zamema is very negative in any other connotation, right? And I brought, in source number 5, an example. The first place we see this word Zamam comes from a very interesting halacha. I'll give it a little background before we read it. There is a halacha, an idea in Jewish law, that is called Eid Zomem. What's an Eid Zomem? Eid Zomem is a witness who goes to court to testify against someone, to give a testimony against someone. And he does it by lying in court just to make sure that the person who is lying about will get punished. It's called an Eid Zomem. He does everything he can to make sure that this person will be falsely accused. All right, it's called an eidzomem. The Torah says in source number 5, you shall do to him, to this witness, as the plot he intended to do to his brother. So you shall put away the evil from your midst, says the Torah. The punishment for such a witness is to punish him in what he planned that will happen to his friend. So if this witness went to court to try to prove and to make sure that his friend will be punished in death penalty, for example, this witness will be punished by death penalty. If he wanted to make sure that this person will need to pay retributions off $100 million, he will need to pay $100 million. He is now going to do what he planned, he intended to do to the other. And the word that the Torah is using to plot, the plot that he intended, you can see in the Hebrew is the word zamam. Zamam, that's the same word as zamema. All right? So of course it's to consider something. Of course it is to plan. But it's very negative. So how do we get from here? Why would Shlomo HaMelech use zamema in such a pasuk? Zamema sadeh v'tikachehu. Now it's almost like she wants to acquire it in a very negative way. No? You don't think? It's important to know the Hebrew behind the words that we're learning because they have a lot of meanings behind it. That's why I say almost every class, you know me already for 3 years, that in every translation there's interpretation. And when we read the English and I said consider, no one thought about any question. But the moment you read the Hebrew, you're like, wait a minute. Wait a moment. Zamema is very negative. I want to give you an answer that I think we can learn from it. I do think that Shlomo HaMelech, who chose the word Zamema, chose it for that case. And I'll tell you why. Another way of looking at it, and maybe that combining all of those answers together, is going back to class number 1, saying that Eshet Chayil was written by Shlomo HaMelech, directed to his mother, Batsheva. Why is that? If you remember, we saw that the only reason Shlomo got to be the king was thanks to his mother, Batsheva, who went to David, and we offered maybe kind of bended the truth and didn't really say 100% what happened. If you remember, she went to David. She told him, you promised me, you swear to me that Shlomo will be the king. And David was like, oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Let's appoint him as the king, right? Take a look what happened here. There is a very powerful woman. She wants to achieve something. She does everything she can. Not exactly in the maybe kosher ways. And she gets it by the end. And not only she gets it, she uses Shlomo later on. And we know that Shlomo was a very young boy. And she's a very dominant. If you read the stories of Shlomo, the beginning of his life, the beginning of his ruling as a king, you see how dominant his mother Batsheva was at those moments. All right. So she didn't only put him in office. She also used later on the fact that he put him in office to actually contribute her more into this, to be a stronger and a greater role in the palace. So I want to offer that maybe by using the word zamema, that can be another way to look at this passage where Shlomo actually talks to about his mother, and the field that he's talking here is actually him and his role as the king, because his mother considered him to be the king. She did everything she can. She succeeded in this, and later on, she even gained the profit out of this. Just saying, maybe there's another way of looking at this pasuk by talking about Batsheva. And then it comes to this maybe allegoric way of explaining what Batsheva did. Questions about pasuk Tet Zayin, pasuk 16 so far. Make sense? So we said three different answers. One, that the Eshet Chayil works together with her husband. Answer number 2, it's a businesswoman, a very successful one that does everything, succeeds in everything she's doing. And 3, I suggested maybe talks about Batsheva that wanted Shlomo to be the king, and she did everything she can, and she actually succeeded and put him and made him to be the king. All right, that's Pasuk Tet Zayin. Let's move to Pasuk Yud Zayin 17. Chagra be'oz motne'a v'te'ametz zro'otea. She girds her waist with strength and makes her arms strong. Okay, that's interesting, because that's the first time we talk about something in this poem, something that is a little bit physical on this woman. Now, one way of looking at this verse is a very simple way, saying she is a strong woman. She's a physically strong woman. That's one way of looking at it. I don't know if you want to take it that way or not. I'm going to take it other way. All right, when you say she makes her arms strong, I'll take it to a different way. And I want to read Yalkut Shimoni. Yalkut Shimoni, the Midrash, Yalkut Shimoni, source number 6, says the following thing. When the messengers, he says, came to tell Sarah the good news, Immediately she girded her loins with strength. What? Again, when the messengers came to tell Sarah the good news, immediately she girded her loins with strength. What do you think that means? What messengers? What good news? What did Sarah do? What is going on here? So, yes, Rose? You're muted.
It was yeah. when the, it was a story of when she they said that she was going to bear a child.
Exactly.
It's Chuck.
Exactly. That's what I think
she
as well.
She laughed, and we don't know why, but anyhow, there's a lot of experience. And then she girded herself, and she made herself ready. So
I think he refers to this as well. And I brought it in source number 7. I brought the entire story of how Sarah and Abraham were told that she's actually going to be pregnant and she's going to give birth at the age of 90, right? We can see in source number 7, he lifted his eyes and saw, and behold, three men were standing before him. That happened after he took the Brit Milah, he made the circumcision and so on. They told him that she will be, they told him different stuff, that she will be pregnant and also that Sodom and Amorah will be destroyed. We know the story where they came to Avram and so on. And one, the thing that we're told, when they told her that, take a look in verse number 6, Avram hurried to the tent to Sarah and said, hurry, three, that's verse 6 in verse number 7, the highlighted one, hurry, three se'as of fine flour. What's three se'as? Three se'as mean a big amount of flour that you need to go and prepare, right? Knead and make loaves, right? So we see from here that at the moment where Sarah was told such an amazing idea, such an amazing message that she, at the age of 90, will be actually pregnant and give birth, what's important to her and her family is to make sure that her guests are welcome. Now a person, and we know it, is usually judged, or you can actually see a person at the most extreme point of his life. Can be in very deep sorrow. If a person is in very deep, harsh sorrow, but you see his values coming out of him, and you see how he helps others, and he's not egocentric, and he's not looking only on himself, you know he's a good person. But this applies also to extreme happiness, to extreme excitement. And imagine this moment of Sarah being told you are going to have a child at the age of 90. And what bothers her and her family is to make sure that their guests have food and that their guests are satisfied. I think what the Midrash is telling Rabbi Yalkut Shimoni says here, it's not about physical strength. It's maybe kind of a mental resilience that a woman is having or a man is having, where at the most extreme point of their lives, they still, first of all, see the others. They still, first of all, see their guests. It's such a level of achnasat ochin, such a level of welcoming your guests, that in the most extreme moment, the happiest moment of her life, at the age of 90, she was told she's going to be pregnant. What she cares about is that her guests are good. And this shows, demonstrate, I think, the resilience that a person has, the strength that a person has, that in those extreme moments, she's still, what she cares about is the others, and she's not losing it and only focusing on herself. And that's, I think, the way that Yalkut Shimoni is reading it. So again, not about a physical strength, as it is about this mental resilience, this characteristic, strong characteristic that Sarah had. And when you say it, Eshet Chayil, we should all ask who in our lives we see it in, and how can we help ourselves become more like this? On Erev Shabbos, right? Think about it. We haven't gotten to the point where we talk about why are we singing on Erev Shabbos. But when we come back from shul, right when Shabbos started, after a long Friday of preparations, come back from work, we're tired, we're exhausted. But do we have guests around the table? Do we take care to our guests around us? Are we seeing others that are in need? Or Shabbos is only about us and ourselves and me and I? Right, I think that seeing this and thinking it at Erev Shabbos should remind us every time we reach the pasuk, think about this point. Like, how can our Shabbos be also for others and not only for ourselves? Just like Sarah, at the happiest moment of her life, she first of all saw others and then saw herself. So that's one way of reading it. A very different way. I'm going to turn it now 180 degrees upside down now. 180 degrees brings us to the same point. I'm going to flip it. All right. Forget the numbers. Brings down the Hoyle Moshe. Something that I'm telling you, if I were not in the army, it would be hard for me to understand. Take a look in source number 8, the Hoyle Moshe. Hoyle Moshe says the following thing. She knows, source number eight, she knows this woman who's strong, she knows how to instill fear and discipline on those who listen to her command. Despite her heart filled with righteousness and kindness, she lacks not the strength of heart required for anyone who holds authority. This Hoyle Moshe is fascinating. Fascinating. Hoyle Moshe says, this Eshet Chayil that Shlomo is talking about is a woman of authority. She's a woman that knows how to instill fear. The Hebrew that Hoyle Moshe uses here, didn't bring it down, he uses the word Eima. Now you can ask, our Israel is here, what is Eima? Eima is horror. This is not only fear. She knows how to instill horror in other people. People are scared of her. They're afraid of her. Every time she walks down the street, people move to the other sidewalk. Now, how can that be an Eshet Chayil? I don't know. This is interesting to think about this. I don't know. Do you have any answer? How can that woman be an Eshet Chayil? What does Hoyle Moshe explain by this? What's the point of it? Anyone has an answer? Anyone has a suggestion? Kathy?
Well, if you say that Shlomo Melech wrote it for his mom, let's go back to the previous sentence. Zamelmasa devati kacheu, and you're including the notion of scheming. Let's twist v'chagra ve'oz motneha and put a little sexual twist to it. But well, we know Motnaim has some sort of sexual, has had sexual orientation. So if she's scheming and uses her female, whatever she has, to exert the what she wants. So maybe the ema here is not fear, like the kind of fear that a soldier would impose, but fear in the sense of what a woman like his mom is able to do to get what she wants. But to amitzroteha, she was able with her arms, you know, to get to where she wanted to go to, and she used that pressure in order to get to where she wanted to go to. It has a little bit of a negative twist to it, it does, but it does fit Shlomo HaMelech and how he views women and the strength of women that kind of manipulated his life, that he was able to appreciate their female wiles, at the same time understand that they took him into places where he may not have wanted to go.
Okay, where should I begin? First of all, thank you, Kathy. Let's hear Rose and others, and then I'll get back to, because I do want to digest for a moment, because I think it's fascinating. So let's hear Rose, and then I'll get back, and I'll try to give my own.
I just want to say, as a woman, I'm not going to the Hebrew or the biblical intimations. I just think that as a woman, especially as a woman, more so maybe, in order to lead, you have to be very, very strong. And strong in a positive way, but strong, you've got to instill an element of fear, because otherwise people will not notice you in terms of leading and doing the things properly, like A, B, C, D. Well, if you don't insist on that and push that, then you don't do a great job. And I think as a woman, more than anything, if you lead, you have to show that strength so that you command respect, I guess.
So I'm glad that I also heard you after what Kathy said, because what I'm about to say is ready for both of you. I appreciate all the answers that are given here, and I think they're wonderful. But I have one problem with them, is that it doesn't make a lot of sense with the Hoyle Moshe. I mean, you all build up on the Hoyle Moshe and say that if we already talk about fear, then maybe this is a kind of a fear. Or if we talk about discipline, it's kind of a discipline. Right, but by the end of the day, Hoyle Moshe says that she is like, people listen to her command. People are horrified by this woman. Again, I'm sorry I didn't bring the Hebrew. Maybe I should have, because the Hebrew word is eima. Now, eima doesn't have sexual context like other words. Maybe fear might have in a different, but eima, when it appears in Tanakh, it has other contexts that are not sexual exactly. So it's a bit hard to say this, even though I think it's a fabulous way of looking on this pasuk, Kathy. And it's also not, I would say, it's not as, you know, gentle authority, Rose, like you're suggesting. It's horror. She's horrifying people. She's horrifying people here. I'll be honest. I don't know how to take it. Like, I don't have my own explanation into this Hoyle Moshe. I wonder if I could, if the Hoyle Moshe would be alive today to ask him, who did he have in mind when he wrote this commentary? on the Eshet Chayil who he's so afraid of. But I think by the end of the day, Hoyle Moshe says that even if there is a, and maybe that's a way to gentilize it, that even if there is a woman who feels like people are afraid of her, she feels maybe pushed off, she feels like people don't see the positive signs in her. And that's what I said, that only after I was in the army and I met, I'll be honest, I'll tell you that the best and the worst commanders are actually the female ones. Like, you know that those is going to be the most strict, the most, those commanders you're totally afraid of, but they're amazing, are the female commanders, usually in the army. That's how it goes. And maybe, and I know, because when I was a commander, when I started the army, I was very afraid from all of those. But when I became a commander myself, and I started to have friends who are female commanders, and I remember having discussions with them where they say, we feel like people are only afraid of us. They don't see any other aspect in our characteristic. And I think it's a criticism to all of, to us, to our society, that I don't know why, but if male shows authority and people are afraid of him, then he gets positive points on this and people appreciate him. But if there's a woman who demonstrates authority and people are afraid of her, it actually deducts points from her. And people just, they don't want to be close to her. They want to run away from her. And I remember I had a good friend of mine. She was also a commander when I was a commander. And she told me how she feels like she's losing her friends when she shows authority. And if there's a way to gentilize it, and again, it might be very far-fetched from what the Hoyle Moshe says, but in Eshet Chayil, and Eshet Chayil is also a woman like this. In other words, it's not only a Disney princess. And it's not only a Barbie, and it's not only that. There's also those women who, yes, they have a lot of authority, and they know how to command, and they know how to discipline, and people can be afraid of them. And there too, an Eshet Chayil, there too can find themselves into this song. Because we said at the beginning of the series, we said every woman can look in Eshet Chayil and see herself somehow in this song. Here is where those women can also see themselves, I think, and maybe that's a way to also gentilize it in a certain degree. So that would be for Hagra Be'oz Motnea V'Te'amet Zotea. She girds her waist with strength and makes her arms strong. Questions so far?
Can I just
before
ask
18. Rose, yeah.
I have a problem with this because, I don't know, the Hebrew fear is such a negative statement. And yet, after that, it says the heart is filled with righteousness and kindness. And
despite this, you would assume that
but fear, like you said, horrified. Fear is one thing, but horrified is like a terrible thing.
It's very hard to say this. Yeah, I know. That's what I said.
No,
it's a very harsh word to use.
That's why I don't understand. I understand the fear in English, but the
very hard, it's definitely a harsh word. I agree it's a harsh word, but that's the way for me to gentilize this. All right, let's move to verse 18. Pasuk Yutchet. Ta'ama ki tov sachra lo ichbe balayla nera. She perceives that her merchandise is good. Her lamp doesn't go out by night. Claudette, very quickly, and then we'll continue.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something. Verse? Yes, on that word, conversation. We may not like the word that is fair and harsh, but I think the writer wanted to say that this is a complete person with all sides.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I think it's an important note. She has both sides, not only one.
Yeah. And we don't like to face it that we as human beings have that side to us, but we do.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So back to Pasuk Yitchet, 18. Ta'ama ki tov sachar lo yichveh balayla nera. She perceives that her merchandise is good. Her lamp doesn't go out by night. So what does exactly that mean? All right, there's two different parts which seem that they don't have a lot of connection to each other. So far, all the psukim, they had two parts, right? And they were together. You could see a connection. What's the relationship here between the first part and the second part? So take a look at the Metzudat David. Metzudat David says the following in source number 9. When she understands that her business is profitable, she will not extinguish her lamp even at night as she deals with her business even at night. This brings back to what we said on Pasuk 16, where we saw that a woman, an Eshet Chayil, is a successful businesswoman. Says the Metzudat David, it's the same path. We're on the same line. Back there, we said that she does everything she can to buy it, to purchase the field, to plant it, and to harvest it, and to invest the profit into other investments. And here he says, She's so good. She also going to work at night. She works day and night, right? That's Mitzvah David. He says you need to read it in the broader context. And again, that brings us back to our first class. We said there's different ways of reading Eshet Chayil. You can read verse by verse, right? Disconnected from the broader context. Or you can read it in a broader context. Mitzvah David definitely read it in a broader context. He said you can't understand this verse without understanding two verses ago. All right? So that's Mitzvah David. And there is a very, very interesting midrash that I brought down in source number 10. And take a look what the midrash says. Midrash in Shmot Rabbah says the following, in source number 10. The females, and that's very relevant for Pesach, the females who were firstborn, they too died, except for Batya, firstborn daughter of Paro. What are we talking here about? We're talking about the plague of the firstborn. We're talking here about Makat Bechorot. And I don't know if you knew that or not, but according to the Midrash, the female firstborn were also killed at that night. Not only the boys, but the girls. And that leads into a very interesting discussion in Halacha. We know that the day of Leila Seder from the morning is called the Ta'anit Bechorot, the fast of the firstborn, where everyone, all those who are firstborn, need to fast as gratitude to God that at that night He saved the Jewish firstborn. Today, we don't fast at that day. We do something different. Maybe someone finishes a Gemara that he learned or a Mishnah that he learned. We have a feast and that exempts us from the fast. But we used to fast for this. And there's a question in Halacha, do women, firstborn women, need to fast there too? All right? Mm-hmm. It's also a question in Halacha that is asked. And from here, we see that, yes, that women were also saved. The Jewish girls that were firstborn were also saved at that moment. So it says all the females, all the Egyptian females who were firstborn, they also died, except for Batya. All right, Batya was the daughter of Paro. She was the firstborn daughter of Paro, and she was the one who saved Moshe when he was baby Moshe in the basket. And it says, for whom a good advocate was found. This is Moses. As it stated, she saw him that he was good. It says, when she opened the basket, she saw that he was good and she adopted him. Take a look what the Midrash tells us. It's fascinating. Therefore, Shlomo said, she perceived that her merchandise is good, so her lamp doesn't go out by night. Which night? The night of the plague of the firstborn. Says this Midrash, the reason Batya, the firstborn daughter of Pharaoh, didn't die is because Moshe prayed for her. Moshe asked Hashem, don't kill Batya. Batya saved me when I was little. He had a karat atov to Batya. And he said, leave her alone. Leave her aside. She shouldn't be touched. I brought this midrash, first of all, because it brings us to the, you know, atmosphere of Pesach. Exactly next week. And also, because we can see from here how Shir HaShirim helps us understand other stories in Tanakh. So it's not only that other stories in the Torah, like we saw Sarah being, told by the angel that she's going to be pregnant, is helping us understand Shir HaShirim. Here, Shir HaShirim helps us understand other stories in Tanakh. Shir HaShirim, we said in the first class, Eshet Chayil, don't say Shir HaShirim. Eshet Chayil and all the other songs and poems and books by Shlomo were added, included in our Tanakh, only because of the interpretation that Chazal gave to them. Without the interpretation, they wouldn't be part of our Tanakh. We established this already in our first class. We see here an example how strong their interpretation is. Chazal, the rabbis, are using those books to explain other stories in Tanakh. And not only other stories in Tanakh, to explain this book. So in that sense, I brought this because it tells us how Eshet Chayil is also a commentary on its own. For a certain way, it's a commentary on other stories in Tanakh, which I think is a fascinating way to look at it. And the Malbim, source number 11, says differently. He says the following thing. Her lamp will not be extinguished at night, for even after death, her lamp will shine in the darkness, for the commandments she uphold and the halachot spoken in her name will illuminate a lamp of mitzvot as her Torah will light forever. This is a beautiful thing. I think it's a beautiful commentary by the Malbim. He refers here to the idea that a woman he talks about a woman that, you know, during her life, she had a lot to say, to teach, to educate others during her lifetime. And people will remember her after her death through that, like her candle will never extinguish, even at night, even after death, she will, her legacy will carry on. That remind me that I once read at the funeral, the Levaya of Nechama Leibowitz, Professor Nechama Leibowitz, one of the greatest Talmidot Chachamim, the female scholars on Tanakh in the 20th century. She didn't have children, Nechama Leibowitz. She wasn't succeeded by anyone. And her nephew, he gave a eulogy on her Levaya, on her funeral. And he said that that's true that Nechama didn't have her own biological children, but she has so many children from all the different kids that learned from her Tanakh. She was such an esteemed teacher. She sent letters throughout Israel every Thursday with questions on the Parsha, and kids used to answer those questions and mail them, as an email, mail them back to Nechama. So, and she checked each and every one of those letters and sent them back with the answer, with the right answers. And thousands of children used to do this. See, Ruchama is nodding and she remembers. Thousands of children used to send her letters about the question that she sent for the Parsha. Again, pre-email, pre-internet, back old good times. And he says, her nephew says, she didn't have her own children. But everyone is your children, right? She lives by her legacy. And that's true, because even though she passed away, her Torah, her education still lives on and will live for many, 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 many generations to come. And I think it's a beautiful way to see this Malbim, is that a person doesn't just, you know, the life of a person maybe ends when he passes away, but his legacy for sure will live forever after him if he or she are able to do this. And that is a beautiful way, because it says that also in Eshet Chayil, we don't only talk about maybe our wives or the women that we know in our household or our mothers. We also talk about the women that are not with us anymore. And this is an opportunity for all of us on Friday night when we say Eshet Chayil, when we reach to this verse, to this pasuk, to think about a woman that we admire, that we miss, that is not along, that is not with us anymore. And she still lives with us with her legacy. It can be a grandmother. It can be a teacher, a beloved teacher. It can be anyone that we know that her legacy still lives with us. And to remember her, to think about her on Friday night, right before Kiddush, right before we sit down for the meal, when we go through this beautiful poem, to also remember those women who are not with us anymore. I think it's a wonderful opportunity based on this interpretation to the Pasuk. Before we move to Yutet, questions? Comments? Benny, you have a question?
No question. I'm amazed at your knowledge and your allegories and everything. But to me, I know when I study liturgy, any liturgy, the relationship is binary. In other words,
two parts.
And the second part always answers the first part. The beauty that you bring all these allegories and tie to Batya and to Sarah and to and you know, but it's very simple. It, to me, it's always, and also it goes with liturgy. When you sing the liturgy, it's always binary. There's very binary. Very few
both sides. Yes, the poem are built. It's interesting. So that's why we see that Eshet Chayil is also a poem. It's not only text. It's also a song that Shlomo wrote. It's a song because it's built from two sides. We also said in the first class that you can see it's written by the Aleph Beit. Aleph Beit Gimel, you see all the letters there that is written by that. We'll finish with verse 19, because we're not going to have the time for everything. Maybe we'll do it quickly. It says, Yadea shilcha b'chishol, b'chishol v'chapea tamchu falech. She lays her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. If you'll have time, I brought here a link. We're not going to have the time to look at it now. But if you want to see what a distaff and a spindle is, maybe you do know. I didn't know, but you can see a link later on and open it. Click on it. You'll see an example of how women used to work on cotton when they used to work with this. You see the diagram where she holds one thing is a distaff, is a cotton. The spindle is there, and they used to work with both hands. I think that this pasuk here, again, it brings us back to the idea that a woman is, we spoke about women going out and doing this and doing that. She's a bit, by the end of the day, she's qualified in the simple things that many women also used to do, right? It's like saying, I don't know, that looking at the little things or the little points on the nice ideas. Metzudat David says the following thing He says that's supposed to be source 12. The numbers were taken away from this, but it's in source 12. Even though she considers merchandise, nonetheless, she does not neglect the traditional woman's work. And she extends her hands and grasps the spindle and support the distaff. And again, if we talk about ideas of what to think during this, so this is an opportunity to think about, you know, not only the big miracle, not only the big ideas, not only the big characteristics, the simple small things in our house that are being taken care of by the husband or the wife, by one of the spouses. The fact that there's no dishes in the sink, the fact that the house is clean, the fact that there's food on Shabbos and so on, is an opportunity here. We'll finish with verse 20. Kappa pasa leani, the idea she chala evyon. She opens her arms to the poor. Yes, she extends her hands to the needy. We see here the poor and the needy. So what's the difference between a poor and a needy? So a poor is someone that is not as poor as someone who's needy. The needy is the one you can see here in the Malbim, source number 2. And the last verse before the last one says the following thing: to the poor, the destitute, worse off than the needy, as she has nothing and is not ashamed to ask. And the term poor also refers to the poverty of the soul. Says the Malbim, it's not only about charity, it's not only about tzedakah, and maybe that, you know, that summarizes a little bit what we said, what we opened was with the Achnasat Sefer Torah. It's not only about donation, it's not only about money, it's not only about charity, it's about the need, the poverty of the soul. It's just someone that you can speak with. It's someone that is there for you. Someone that understands you. Someone that you know will help you in times of need, especially in mental problems. And again, it doesn't matter who we are and what characters we have, but in every pasuk and in every verse of Eshet Chayil, we can think about someone that we know those characteristics apply to it. And I'm sorry we're not going to have time to finish everything and the entire song here, but at least, you know, we finished the majority and we saw a lot of the different aspects that we see inside the Eshet Chayil. And I want to wish you, if you're not going to, you know, have any class before Pesach, we should have a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. We should have a good and a kosher and a healthy and a wonderful Pesach, where we will feel more this year more than ever the idea of being free people, the idea of being liberated Jews, wherever we are in Israel, in Canada, wherever we may be, feeling, I think this Pesach is needed this year more than ever. So I want to wish you and your families Chag Kasher V'Sameach. And stay tuned for more information about the upcoming classes that we will have, Bezrat Hashem. And again, I will send the recording of this class along with the source sheet and also the link if anyone want to help to give a gift. No donation is too small towards our goal to finish the Sefer Torah on time for Lag BaOmer. It is much, much, much appreciated. And I want to thank you all for coming here for the past 4 weeks and learning together on Eshet Chayil. Definitely there is more to be said. Thank you very much, everyone, and have a great day, everyone.
And be safe, please.
Come here.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good day.